My name is Kat Paz, and it's time for a bit of a diversion this Monday morning, taking care of business. I'm going to assume we have all heard these words, we need to talk. Dun, dun, dun. It creates this feeling of tension before any other words have been said, doesn't it? Difficult conversations are not fun, and my next guest, Rebecca Horton, CEO of Bold HR, is here in the studio as we explore how to take the difficult out of difficult conversations. Welcome to Taking Care of Business, Rebecca.
Hey, Kat. Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
That's great. Let's start with clearing the air a little bit. Oh, my gosh. Great pun. What are difficult conversations?
Well, there's lots of them, right? It really is whatever. I think the topic of a difficult conversation tends to be, on the one hand, things that we tie ourselves up in knots about. So if we don't like a confrontation, if we prefer to avoid certain topics, then those conversations become more difficult in our mind. And then, of course, the other kind of difficult conversations are the one where we're very afraid that it might be difficult for the other person to receive. So we get worried about their reactions. So anything that falls in that category, and the content, you know, the subject of those could be endless, but anything that falls in that category is what we would classify as a difficult conversation, whether that's at work, whether it's at home.
See, I found it harder to have conversations with my siblings because I knew the reaction I'd get. So I found that more in the personal sense a bit harder, but it is hard to have conversations, and there's people that do it every day in their lives, like medical professionals, you know, passing on that bad news every day. Why do people end up in other situations? Why do people end up where they are having to have these conversations and coming to the boardroom? What has driven that for the person who's giving this difficult conversation?
Yeah, it's a really good differentiation that you pulled out there straight away, Kat. I think it's worth hovering on that the only truly difficult conversation is the one where you are giving bad news. You know, there's no way to sugarcoat that. There's no way to soften the blow. But every other kind of conversation that we think about typically isn't as bad as we fear that it will be. So conversations like that could be a difficult negotiation where, let's say, it's quite a high-stakes conversation. You really, really need the outcome. And you're really worried that they need an opposing outcome, so it's going to be quite heated. Another difficult type of conversation, quite a classic in the workplace, is feedback. You know, the we need to talk conversation, I think, in the workplace could be exchanged with, can I give you some feedback? Dun, dun, dun. you know, we all hate that moment because your immediate reaction is no, or what have I done wrong? Or, oh, my God, here we go.
Yeah.
So that is a really, really big one. And a lot of people spend half their lives avoiding having to have those kinds of conversations because of the level of anxiety and stress that it brings up in ourselves.
A lot of people do avoid confrontation. Is it more personality based?
It can be. So we all have a fight or flight reaction to anything that we perceive as a threat. And it's quite interesting that when we look at physical threats, you know, if you're walking home late at night and somebody just appears out of nowhere at you, you don't know until it happens whether you're going to put your fists up and protect yourself or run like the wind. You don't know which one of those creatures you're going to be until the moment happens. Now, what we don't realize at work is that we actually behave in exactly the same instinctive and uncontrolled way when something is perceived to be threatening us at a psychological level. So we actually behave as if we're being attacked.
Ah, okay. My poor siblings.
So you don't really know. Yeah, it's very interesting. You don't really know what you're going to be, a fighter or a flyer, you know. And a lot of people will know what they are when they walk out of a conversation that they really didn't enjoy and they say to themselves, and you'll probably have said this to yourself, we all have, either, I wish I hadn't said that, or I wish I had said this.
Yes, that's so true.
So one is the regret, you know, the flight reaction. And the other one almost wants the opportunity to go back in and have another go. And that's the fight reaction.
Do people tend to freeze? Some people have a visceral reaction, right? Heart beats faster. Mm-hmm. Maybe their ears become blocked a little bit or something like that. Big pang in the head.
You described it perfectly. Yes, that's exactly what happens. What happens is one part of our brain controls that threat reaction and it's scanning constantly. It's a bit paranoid. The minute it spots something that it sees as a threat, like what it would call a difficult conversation, it actually really struggles to keep the rest of your senses cool and to keep your brain thinking logically. It actually sucks up all the oxygen from the rest of your brain and pumps it into your lungs and into your muscles to get ready to fight or to run. And it's such an ancient reaction that it affects how we think. So it stops us thinking clearly. It stops us listening properly. It does the big rush of blood. You might have experienced it almost like a pounding in your ears or a funny buzzing sound. That is the blood rushing through your system, getting ready for some physical reaction. It's a burst of energy. But of course, in a work environment, you don't need it physically, and it actually gets in the way mentally.
That's true. How can business owners or people as a whole ensure these conversations do not get awkward or, worse, intense, and people are throwing their morning tea across the room?
Yeah, well, it takes two to tango, Kat. So the first thing that you can really concentrate on, and the one over whom you have the most power, if you like, is yourself. And we often go into difficult conversations with a mindset that's really not helpful. So think it through. You know, often we go in and we think about what the other person's done wrong and how the other person's got the wrong idea. And we think about how we're going to persuade them, or if we're giving them feedback, how we're going to tell them what we'd rather see. Now, all of these things, if you're on the receiving end, can be quite patronizing, really. Because we've got ourselves into a mindset of them being wrong and us being right before we've walked into the room. Now, in that scenario, their amygdala will pick up on the threat and they'll react in a fight or flight way. And we've triggered that by not having the right mindset in place. So there's a couple of things that we can do at our end. The first thing that we can do is to really get our head in the right space to have a positive, open conversation. And there's a couple of little mantras in there. You know, one is, this person is a good person. You know, they're not going out of their way to make my life miserable, despite what my brain might tell me. Because we're all, you know, we're very judgmental, so we can't help ourselves. That does flit across our brain. Another one that I think is really important is that we both have a role to play in this. You know, there's no relationship on the planet, and difficult conversations are usually in the middle of a relationship of some sort. There's no relationship on the planet that's only about one person. By definition, it's about two of you. So you must be playing a role. And if you walk in curious as to what the role is that you are playing, how you're contributing to the problem, again, you'll step down that sense of tension. And the last one is that not everything is as it appears. So there will be more underlying the situation. And because we love to judge, because our brains are terribly clever, and often our brains think that they're much cleverer than they actually are, we kind of go, oh, well, there's two pieces of information, therefore this is the whole story, and this person is a bad person, and I'm going to help them by telling them what's right. Now, that combination isn't great.
It's not collaborative at all.
It's not, is it? And imagine if somebody walked in with that attitude to you. What would your reaction be to them?
Well, you see, when you said, you know, people are thinking this person, I've got other choice words. So that's what would be going in my mind.
Yes. Of course. I'm going to say, what would your reaction be to them? That you're allowed to say on radio. That's exactly right. Everyone would react really badly, and therefore that's what happens. So we trigger this animosity in the conversation by simply going in with the wrong attitude.
Right. And what would be the best way to start the conversation? What kind of words, apart from saying, there's no good way of saying, can you come into my office? We need to talk. Do you have time for a coffee? Already people can feel that we're instinctual. But then once you've settled into the scene, what would be a way to start the conversation instead?
Yeah, I advise keep it short and snappy. What we tend to do, because we're pretty hyped up, by the time we've decided that we want to have a difficult conversation, our tension rates are through the roof.
Yeah.
And 8 times out of 10, the other person has no idea this is coming. So you're not even on the same playing field when you're walking into the room. So what I would say is keep it snappy, keep it short. Why don't you say something like, look, I've noticed this, and it's making me worry that you're feeling this. Tell me what's going on.
Okay.
Or what do you think about that? Or do you think so too? Engage in a two-way conversation as quickly as possible. Limit the amount of judgment that you pour on them, because that's when they react badly. And just engage them with a question, what's happening, what's going on? So so that they can engage and talk to you about what's going on.
Okay. I think that's a good way to start. And it should be in a private place rather than with an audience, so to speak, eavesdroppers.
I would advise it if it's something that you think is going to be quite difficult, if you think that they're going to react badly. So the kinds of things that they might react badly to could be something that you've raised 100 times and they're not doing anything about it, and you need to find another way to get through or to get over this hurdle. One might be something that you think that they will think is quite contentious. So something where you're worried that they are going to want to snap back at you. Things like that you would do in private. If it's, you know, if it's quite personal feedback, you know, about their hygiene or something like that, absolutely, you know, use your judgment properly. You would definitely do those sorts of things in public. But most of the reasons that we try to avoid doing these things in more casual settings, you know, asking somebody to come into the office, closing the door, you're already starting to generate that sense of fear and threat in them. Which means that their brain closes down, right? They get that fight or flight reaction and their ears start buzzing and their brain starts to slow down. So if you want to have a good conversation, and this is a mistake that I think a lot of people make when they feel they need to give someone feedback, is it's kind of one way. You know, I'm going to bring you in, I'm going to close the door, I'm going to tell you what you've done wrong, tell you what you should do right, and then you can go. That's not a great conversation.
It's awful.
It is awful, but that's got quite a lot of feedback training teaches you to do. So, you know, we've really got to kind of step away from that quite archaic way of dealing with people, particularly in the workplace, right? And just think a little bit more about them as a human. You know, you wouldn't treat your best friend like that. So how would you have that conversation? You might see them walking out of the office and say, hey, can I walk with you?
Yes.
And then when you've sort of stepped away from the crowd a little bit, say, hey, I noticed on Thursday that you're always late for this meeting and it's kind of worrying me that you're not enjoying the project or that the meeting's at the wrong time. Tell me what happens.
Right.
In a more casual setting, you might get a more casual reaction. And that person might turn around and go, yeah, that particular project bores me to death. Or, no, it's just that childcare clashes. And suddenly it's not a big deal. But if you brought them into the room, closed the door, dropped the blinds and said, can I give you some feedback? Then it's going to be a big deal, even if the answer was still the same.
Well, that's right. Yeah, everyone's grabbing the virtual popcorn at that point to kind of go, oh, okay, door's closed. What's going on?
And that's embarrassing on its own, isn't it, really?
Yes, because even if it went well, you're opening the door to a room full of people looking at you going, what happened?
That's it. And we know that gossip is a marvelous thing at work. So it's just, I think it's just something to really try and avoid is this kind of big statement stuff. Because it doesn't actually have the impact that you wish it did. You know, it doesn't make your relationship better. It doesn't make that person want to perform differently. If anything, it makes them angry and resentful at you, embarrassed in front of their colleagues, and makes it far harder next time for you to be able to give them any feedback at all because they're really not enjoying the experience.
That's so true. Is there a particular time of day or week that is the best to have these conversations?
What a great question. You know, the human brain is quite tired by the afternoon. We make a lot of decisions about how we're going to behave, what we're going to do, how we're going to solve problems. So hitting somebody earlier in the morning, they tend to be in a better mood, they tend to be more open-minded, and they tend to be more open to problem solving. So probably better at collaborative challenges. If it's a really, really difficult conversation, if you really feel that they'll be quite confronted by it, you really need to judge your person. You know, you can hit somebody with a difficult conversation on a Friday afternoon and you might feel better because you might justify to yourself, well, there's a couple of days to get over it and then they can come back into the office and it won't be too disruptive. You'll feel better because you've got it off your chest before your weekend. But you're giving them that to carry through their whole weekend. So I would say get it out earlier in the week so that you've then got 5 days together to work it through and get it out. And then they can also go into their weekend feeling like we've actually solved something as opposed to we've just tabled something.
I can see that because if you have that conversation on a weekend and if that person hasn't taken it very well, they have no outlet to kind of come back. So I guess offering some sort of a meetup a follow-up meeting and saying, do you want to explore this a bit more and sit down?
Definitely.
If it's one of those things where it's like, let's troubleshoot this, let's understand it better.
Yeah, definitely. And I think if that's the attitude you're going in with, then the chances are you'll come out with that as an outcome. But if somebody does get really upset, and it happens, you know, remember, we can only control our side of the equation and set the scene for them to not react badly, but they still might. You can't eliminate that reaction. And usually it's because there's something else going on underneath, right?
Yes.
So if somebody does do that, what you've described is absolutely perfect. You know, give them a break. They don't have to work it out in the room with you right away. They need time to digest what you've just hit them with. They need time to think through what their reaction might be. Otherwise, they'll react under pressure, which might not be a good reaction. So often what I would say is just give people some time and just say, hey, you know, I can see this has kind of hit you out of the blue. Why don't we break? Why don't you go away and have a think about it? And why don't we grab coffee at 9 tomorrow morning and we can talk through? And I loved your language. Let's talk through a way through this. Let's find some solutions together.
Yeah, that sounds quite gentle. I think I'm talking from my own experiences of, I wish this had happened. Or, I mean, I'm 10 years behind the moment or so. And we've been talking more assuming it's almost like a supervisor and team member situation. But what if you're not the person who is in the position of power? How then can you have a conversation with, say, that supervisor or management about something that you need addressed or simply put on the table?
Look, that can be a bit of a, you know, more complex, more nuanced because of the power dynamics. So there's no running away from that reality. But if you've noticed a particular behavior with, let's say, your boss, you can still use the same frame. So you could still jump in the lift with them on the way out and go, hey, you all right? I noticed in the meeting this morning you were really, really tense. That's not like you. Is everything okay?
Okay.
You know, and just give them that moment. And again, there is a gentility to it. Whilst you're not holding them to account, as you might do more if you were their supervisor, you are letting them know that it was observable. You're also sending them a signal that you care. You're not critical. It's a care factor. But a half-smart leader would go, ah, sorry about that. I didn't realize it was that obvious.
Yeah, I think if someone's coming up to you, then they know they care, because others would just act with their feet, or, you know, that's when 5 p.m. comes and everyone's gone like ants.
That's right. And we kind of, you know, most of us would rather avoid having a difficult conversation. So even that kind of feedback to our boss, we'd probably run away from it and not do it. So the 1-2% of the times that it happens, it actually usually has quite a positive reaction on the people leader, because that people leader doesn't get as much feedback as they're giving the rest of the team. It's quite lonely as a leader.
Oh, it is.
So sometimes it's quite nice to get a little bit of feedback in that big echo chamber that, you know, you're doing a good job or not. And that's okay too. But feedback's really, really important for people.
That's actually good. And priming the moment, does meeting at the local pub rather than the office or offering alcohol, which is more in bigger settings, before delivering the news, is that advisable?
Not really. No. I think if you have to lubricate the conversation with alcohol, then you're probably approaching it the wrong way from the outset.
So you're being more directive rather than collaborative.
Well, I think so. Or you're trying to loosen them up to be more amenable to what you're about to tell them to do. And let's be honest, if it goes wrong, it's going to go really, really wrong, because you've introduced booze into the situation, which, if someone's going to get emotional, they're going to get twice as emotional.
Yes. On a Friday afternoon.
On any given day. So I think any substances that are going to make somebody behave in a way that's not as controlled as they would normally be, it's just ill-advised.
Okay. And what would be recommended if you've received, say, feedback, or you've just been part of this difficult conversation, or you're the one giving it and you're so tense, what advice would you give them? Where to next? Who to talk to? What to do?
Yeah. Look, I think if you're walking into and walking out of a difficult conversation feeling really unsatisfied, that the conversation didn't go where you wanted it to go, that you don't feel that anything's going to change as a result, and you've got no way to pick up and carry on tomorrow, which, you know, is always a good thing to do. If you're not getting there in the room, take a break, pick up again tomorrow. If you haven't managed to do that, then you can feel pretty frustrated and annoyed. Now, part of this, you have to sense check with yourself. Is it because you didn't win? Is it because you didn't get to tell them they were wrong when you were right? Because some of the times you're not right. And most of the time, there's two rights in the situation. So the argument's never going to finish.
That's right.
And a lot of the time, that's what's going on with us. You know, we are bred to win an argument, and we go into difficult conversations feeling like it's an argument, therefore we have to win it. So if we can kind of unpack that and leave it alone, then that sense of unfulfillment at the end of a conversation doesn't have to be as bad. Sometimes we know that tabling it is the first and most difficult step in solving it. And sometimes we know that we just need to give it a couple of days and then go back and say, hey, tricky conversation on Monday. How are you feeling about it?
Yes.
Can we talk about it some more?
Yes. Oh, that's a perfect way of doing it. It makes someone feel included as well and understood that, you know, then they can kind of go, it was tough. Thank you so much. Well, we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for these insights. I would love to talk more about this, difficult conversations, but it's given a good insight into how to start one. And it takes away that whole feeling of it's a directive, like you sit down, I talk, now get out. And I love that we've explored that a bit more.
Yeah, I think it's really important. You know, these days, well, I think this whole COVID pandemic has shown us that we're all a lot more equal than we thought we were. And therefore, we should really be talking to each other as equals as well. So I think trying to step away from this fake hierarchy that we created in the 50s as much as we can and have proper human-to-human conversations will build much better relationships and much more trust in the workplace if we can just stick to being normal with each other.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the time, Rebecca.
Great to be here, Kat. Thanks so much. And great questions.
Thank you. Join us again. I'll see you next time. Bye.